Hello, everyone.
Hi.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Alice.
And you're listening to Xena Made Me Gay.
It's incredibly hot in Vienna, so I'm recording it with my windows open. So if you happen to hear weird noises, those are trains outside my windows. But I cannot close it. I'll boil.
Yeah, same here in Berlin, but I don't think there are any trains you could hear. Maybe some ambulances. That's the most likely perpetrator.
Unique atmosphere of each particular city.
In the times of brick phones, Tamagotchis, and curtain bangs, the 90s kids cried out for a badass. She was Xena, the warrior princess. The kicks, the moves, the nostalgia, the queerness. Xena made us gay.
Yeah, and in this lovely atmosphere, we are gathered today to discuss episode 21 of season 1. Called The Greater Good.
I wanted to say that we're almost done with season 1. That's so weird.
We are. Just, I think, 3 episodes left.
Mm-hmm.
The ambulance, yeah. Can you hear it?
Yep. You were correct.
The ambulance that was promised.
But, like, not to worry. Xena has about 100 seasons and thousands of episodes for us to talk about.
6 seasons, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I feel like 6 seasons is not unusually long. It's just because every season has more than 20 episodes. That's what makes it long and not the number of seasons.
That's true. Yeah, because now we're so used to 10 and sometimes 8 episodes per season.
Mm.
So like more than 20 is like, whoa.
Yeah, but that's how it used to be. That used to be very much normal. Up till, I don't know, the mid-10s, maybe?
So I think that's something that people are talking about a lot in connection to Bridgerton, because they're like, we used to get shows every year, a new season every year, and the quality was all right, and there were like 15 to 20 episodes in a season, and now you wait, like, make us wait like 3 years for 8 episodes, and they're shit.
Oh, no.
I don't think that they're shit, actually. I'm not a season 3 hater, but I'm not a Bridgerton lover to begin with, so it's hard for me to judge.
I've never seen a single episode, so I don't know.
But anyway, I wanted to actually talk to you about something else, not Bridgerton.
Good.
Yeah, because you wouldn't have a lot to contribute.
No.
I just wanted to say happy Pride Month, because we're recording it actually on the last day of Pride Month.
Yeah, well, so we are recording it on the last day of Pride Month everywhere, but one day before the beginning of Pride Month in Germany, which is, it's a special place, and for some reason they decided that Pride Month was supposed to be in July. I don't know why. Like, there must be a reason. I have not looked into it. But yeah, that's how it is here.
Yeah. So it's upcoming for you. It already passed for me, sad times. So I just wanted to catch up, maybe like talk about like what have we been doing? Why haven't we been recording? Just, I don't know. I just want to chat and maybe fill our listeners in on some details. Yeah, so it was a good Pride Month for me, I think. I've been doing lots of stuff. I think that like it's my first year really settling in Vienna, so I have more acquaintances. I have connections with some human rights organizations, so I can contribute more now. So it was my first time going in a column. Before, I just went to Pride and like either just looked at the parade or just went along and like sometimes joined the columns that I liked. And this time me and my partners actually, like, interchangeably were carrying the giant banner of our Russian-speaking community against war. So yeah, it was a nice experience, actually.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds cool. I don't know what to contribute to that.
Yeah, yeah, because yours is upcoming, but you can say, what are your plans? Like, are you planning to go to Coca-Cola parade, as you call it, or?
No, I haven't gone to the Coca-Cola parade out of my own volition for quite a few years now. I only went a couple of years ago because you wanted to. Yeah, no, for real, you wanted to go, and that's why I did. But it's not, I don't know, I'm not very how do I say it, I don't feel good necessarily going to these sanitized pride parades at this point of my queer existence. It was the most fantastic thing the first few times I saw them, and it was beautiful, and I felt connected to this, at that time, new world for me that I was just stepping into. But I think as my political consciousness has developed, I became more and more aware of the ways in which those types of pride parades are a little bit disappointing, let's say that. And so, no, I don't go to those anymore. I started going to dyke marches over the last few years, and I really enjoy those. So I will almost certainly go to one this year as well. I think that at this point, this is my favorite pride march type event, because mm-hmm. there's also the what I refer to as the Coca-Cola Pride Parade, which is, you know, the your typical mainstream one with like corporations and political parties and all that. Mm-hmm. And then in Berlin, there because it's Berlin, there are alternative Pride parades.
Aww.
That are more, they're more left, I guess. Mm-hmm. And there has been a lot of drama related to those as well. There were years when there were several alternative pride parades because the alternative pride parades hated each other for political reasons.
There had to be an alternative for an alternative pride.
Yes. there was one of the years when one part of the alternative pride parade called the cops on the part that I was marching with.
Oh, wow.
Yep. So, you know,
fun times.
It's a whole complex situation, and I think that also turned me off the alternative parades for a bit, so I haven't been to those either in a few mm-hmm. years. But yeah, currently the Dyke March is my happy place. And let's hope that doesn't get fucked by something. Which, stay tuned!
Let's hope so, yeah. Yeah, I think that I'm still in the just feeling happy to be there stage, because it's just my third year living in a country where pride parades are allowed.
Yeah, so, I totally get that. Like, I remember those feelings.
Yeah. And like, even the corporations, for some reason, like, especially when they're not brands, but just, for example, there was like, every time in Vienna, the parade is opened by all trams with rainbow flags, and like, that's the Vienna Linien contribution, and that I find extremely charming and moving for some reason. So like, the fact that our train system, our public transportation system, our like Austria's airlines, all of them are like, yay, gay people. I'm like, yeah, thank you. You'll see.
No, I will allow trams for sure. The airlines probably not. but I think trams are definitely allowed to be gay without any problematic connotations.
Yeah, yeah. And they've been sporting rainbow flags for the whole month. I really, really liked it. And we'll see how I feel about the next ones, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's a journey, I think.
Yes. So, with that in mind, let's discuss a very gay show.
Yes, what better way to celebrate Pride Month, whether it's ending or just starting?
Yes, yes. So, let's get into the episode. We open with Gabrielle practicing her Kung Fu Amazon sexy staff kicks and throws. And she's gotten quite good at it, actually, and she looks very smug while doing it. And then she says, kind of, pointing the staff to the camera, want to try it again? And then we see that she was actually talking to Argo, who is not impressed at all. And Gabby begins doing her swings again, like begins swinging her dick, I mean staff. But then we hear Xena's whistle and Argo kicks the staff out of Gabrielle's hands, somehow managing not to kill her in the process. So that's precision.
Yeah.
Xena catches the staff and goes back to Gabrielle, also looking really smug. And Gabrielle complains, I hate it when you do that. I gotta practice. And Xena answers, not on my horse.
And I mean, that's fair, right? Like, yeah. There's literally no reason for Gabrielle to be doing all of those moves at Argo. Like, she could be doing it at a tree, at a stone, at fucking nothing. She could just be doing it at fucking nothing. There's no reason to do it at a horse. Like, again, Gabrielle is just starting on her warrior journey. Like, things slip out of your hands. You can make a mistake. You can hit the horse. And she already has this horrible relationship with Argo. Why would she want to jeopardize it even further by being like, oh, let me be all weirdly aggressive and intimidating towards you?
Yeah, yeah. But you gotta give it to Argo. She's a very calm horse. She's unfazed when Gabrielle is doing that.
That is true. And Xena then says that she kind of wishes that Argo and Gabrielle would get along better. And that sometimes it just takes patience to build a relationship with someone who annoys you. And Gabrielle is like, oh, no, she doesn't annoy me. And Xena's like, I wasn't talking about you. Such a burn.
Yeah, classic Xena.
Yeah, it is classic, but it is well done.
Yeah, yeah, I also enjoyed it. And Gabrielle's like, hey, very funny. So Xena and Gabrielle separate for reasons unknown.
Literally no reason.
Yeah, and Xena is approached by a curly haired extra who literally looks like she's a delivery person who was plucked from the streets, and they said, quick, we need you to summon Xena, which she does, claiming that Talmadeus wants to attack Lord Seltzer.
Why a delivery girl?
I don't know, because like by delivery girl, I mean just like some random person on a set who was delivering noodles to like a cameraman.
Oh,
and they're like, you should come and be in an episode. And she's like, I don't know, I cannot act. They're like, doesn't matter, you just come in and say the line. Because like, she's super awkward when she does that.
So just like a PA, a production assistant,
I guess. Yeah,
because when you said delivery girl, I thought like, what about her gives, you know, like food delivery?
I don't know. I just think, for me, it's like just a random person on the set.
I also want to focus on specifically what the delivery girl says. She says that Talmadeus is planning to attack the factory. The factory! Factory! Come on, Teletubby! teleport us to the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah.
What? It's factory? Ancient Greece?
I wish I could say it was the stupidest thing in this episode, but it's not.
No, but like, I don't know. It's just such a baffling word choice. And at no point does anything happen that kind of justifies.
No.
Like, we see what the quote-unquote factory looks like.
It looks like a village.
It's just... there's a village, and in the village there's like a house that looks kind of like a shed.
Yeah.
Where, you know, they make fizzy water. They keep saying factory throughout the episode. Yeah. It was driving me so mad.
It seems that it's not even deliberate, because at some point during Xena Warrior Princess, we go into the territory where there are like ancient Greek supermarkets, and that's satire. But this just seems like sloppy writing, really.
Yeah, it's so strange.
So, the delivery girl explains that Lord Seltzer is the kindest, most giving man that her village has ever seen. And if this name sounds stupid to you, brace yourselves. Because, she delivers those lines, the delivery girl delivers those lines, and then she burps, so that to give us a hint why Lord Seltzer is called Lord Seltzer. I don't know, that kind of gives me a clue on what this episode is going to be, and this episode is going to be a very weird mix between a tragedy and a slapstick comedy.
Yes and no. The name is silly, but it's not the dumbest name in the world. So the first guy who started commercially producing carbonated water was called Johann Schweppe. So the founder of Schweppes. So I don't know. It did, like, people don't say Schweppes the same way that it says seltzer. So of course it didn't become like such a common word, but it's not completely impossible that a common good would be called after its not creator, but like the first person to start like commercially distributing it.
I guess, I don't know, I think that the burping got to me.
Like, the burping was insane.
She was also trying to be dramatic and then burping, so no wonder she had no idea how to play it.
And like, The most fascinating thing about this part of this episode's storyline for me is that at no point does it become important that there's carbonated water involved.
Yeah, no.
Like, they just decided that, okay, and in this episode there's going to be a village that produces carbonated water, and that's it. That is the extent of it.
Yeah, it's used as a gimmick sometime, but like, it's in no way, shape, or form important to the story.
So. Yeah, like, there's no payoff. Like, at first I was like, oh, she's burping, and that means that there'll be like something in the water, you know? Nope. Mm-mm. Nothing like that. So anyway, while Xena is talking to the delivery girl, Gabrielle is kind of trying to get up onto Argo, but she's really scared, so she's doing it very slowly.
And at that particular point, Xena summons Argo with the whistle. And of course, Argo runs straight to her, knocking poor Gabrielle to the ground, which doesn't help their relationship, I assume. So then we see a bunch of baddies rummaging through the village. And among other things, they're making holes in big barrels standing on a cart, and we see carbonated drink bursting through those holes. So again, like, they make it a point that, like, Lord Seltzer is Lord Seltzer because they produce carbonated water. So we quickly find out that Lord Seltzer is, in fact, Salmonius, who managed to get himself in some kind of trouble. So the baddies inform him that Talmadeus, we assume that that's the main warlord baddie of the episode, would want Salmonius' head on his table as a centerpiece, and Salmonius protests in his usual fashion, saying, wouldn't he like a nice bouquet of flowers instead?
Yeah. He's like, besides, I look rubbish with an apple in my mouth.
Oh, I love him. I really love him in this episode.
Yeah. We'll talk about it later on, but he is definitely one of the main characters, whether the screenwriters knew it or not of this episode.
Definitely. So then the baddie, in a true baddie fashion, says, "Burn it down," and his gang starts aiming at the village with burning arrows. But of course, they are disarmed with the trusted chakram that manages to not only break the arrows, but in the same swift motion, ricochet from a stone nearby, go back and break all their swords.
Yeah. And so it all takes a while to happen, because the chakram flies around waiting for the guys who were holding the bows and arrows to drop those, then draw their swords, and then it swings again and breaks all the swords.
I mean, ChatGPT has nothing to chakram. Chakram is very smart. I also am curious what chakram is made of, because it seems to be very sturdy, like breaking almost anything.
Yeah. I mean, it must be some kind of adamantium, right? Now that I think of it, it's strange that they didn't use it to free Prometheus back in episode 8 about charming toasters. But I guess they wanted this extra MacGuffin there in the form of this special sword.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I do think we get Chakram's origin story at some point. I don't remember it, but I hope we'll get to it.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be like a Chakram character arc development, because at some point it like merges with another Chakram and becomes like a super Chakram.
Two chakrams in one. Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't remember whether that's also the chakram origin story. Do we get to see the, like, you know, baby chakram
in a cradle growing up,
frolicking in the woods, and then a tragedy happens. A chakram warlord comes and massacres baby chakram's family.
Chakram family. Yeah.
You know, and then the chakram father, his dying wish says, "Son, go and help Xena."
We're available if somebody wants to adapt the story to screen.
You know, we've been waiting all these years for a potential Xena reboot or spinoff, and there it was, Chakram, the spinoff, waiting all along.
Yeah, I mean, given the state of the cinema industry right now, I can see that.
Oh my god, yeah, emoji a movie.
I mean, it's a sequel. What more do you want?
Yeah.
So around this time, Xena somersaults from Argo into the heat of the battle, and Salmonius is super happy to see her, and Xena gives him the "Okay, Lord Seltzer, what the fuck did you get yourself into now" look.
Yeah. Xena then fights the baddies while Salmonius is very unhelpfully distracting her with pleas to help him specifically. Nothing bad is happening to him. He just wants, you know, extra
attention.
Protection. Attention and extra protection. Then a mysterious song starts playing, and we see someone load a dart into this kind of like a mini crossbow thing. And the camera pans up slowly, and we see that this someone is dressed quite similarly to Xena. And the way that the camera pans up is, of course, reminiscent of the intro to the show itself. But there's something different, because this mysterious person is a blonde. I wonder who that might be. Anyway, so this mystery person fires the dart from like 3 kilometers away. And it hits Xena right in the neck. She immediately looks very disoriented. She takes the dart out of her neck and she smells it. So I'm guessing she smells poison. She also tastes it for good measure. Why not? For a moment, it seems like her vision goes like slightly blurry, but then very quickly, she's back to being fine, I suppose. And she just tucks the dart underneath her forearm guard, which is a confusing choice. Like, wouldn't that hurt her? It's a sharp dart. She's putting it right, like, under a thing tightly, kind of grasping her forearm.
Yeah, yeah. And presumably there is poison on the dart. So yeah, it's not, yeah, not the smartest so idea.
Strange. No. It's the boob dagger
all over again.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I really like the introduction of Kalista here. Is it okay that I can say that this someone
yes,
is
Kalista? I think if someone is listening to our podcast, they are
know.
Familiar enough with Xena Warrior Princess that they know it's Kalista.
Yeah. So I liked it. It's cool that we don't know who the person is yet, that she appears like that, because for some reason I remembered her appearing like next episode or like the episode after that where we see her introduction and her origin story. But no, she appears now, and I think that's a super cool way to introduce basically the main villain of the show, right? Like I would say Kalista is the main villain of the show.
Yeah. So Gabrielle walks up to Xena and tells her that Salmonius has been selling fizzy water. And she says it like it's some sort of a scam, which it actually isn't. Like, fizzy water isn't fake.
You know? I mean, it's pretty much the most straightforward thing that you can think of.
And Salmonius immediately walks up to them and speaks pig Latin to them, out of all things. asking them to only address him as Lord Seltzer. Mm-hmm. So Xena asks him about why Talmadeus might be after him, and Salmonius tells her a heartwarming story about how the people of this town used to have no energy, no pep, before he started giving them this magic elixir.
Aww.
And the way that he's describing it, it sounds like maybe he's like mixing in some coke into his soda. Which is also a very traditional thing to do.
Yep, definitely.
You know, the most famous soda of them all. It's in the name.
Yeah.
But he then also, kind of in passing, all casually mentions that he sold Talmadeus some talcamite swords and belt buckles. Gabrielle asks what talcamite is, which is a reasonable question because it's something that doesn't actually exist. It only exists in the Xena universe. Mm-hmm. And Xena explains that it looks and feels like metal, but it dissolves in water, which that sounds kind of cool. Like, I want to check it out.
Yeah, that would be a very cool chemistry experiment. Like, and now we submerge this thing in water. But also, the belt buckles is a nice touch. You can imagine what happened.
Yeah, and if you can't, it is spelled out for you in the next line of the dialogue, because he says that there was a rainstorm during a battle soon after that transaction, which resulted in, as Gabrielle says, a big naked defeat.
Anyway, Salmonius asks Xena to please take him away from all his troubles, but Xena says that they're not going anywhere, and she really wants to stay and help these people, and that's going to be a big theme throughout the episode. She also says that her plan is to make Talmadeus realize what he's up against. So let's see how she does it. Then we finally see Talmadeus, the baddie of the episode. He's waiting for Salmonius' head on the platter and distracting himself with arm wrestling his soldiers on burning coals so that the loser gets his hand fried. You know, boys and their toys. Just the thing you do in a baddie camp.
Yeah, like their elbows are not on the coals themselves, but
yeah.
if you lose, that's where your hand goes. There is a place in Berlin, the Museum of Video Games, where you can play Pong, but if you miss the ball, you get like an electric shock.
Oh gosh.
So, not too far.
I mean, I can totally imagine in bro culture that's a possible thing. Sure.
For sure. For sure.
The soldier comes in while Telmadeus is arm wrestling, and he says that the woman with the strength of Ares and the speed of Hermes did not let him capture Salmonius. And instantly, Telmadeus yells Xena and defeats his opponent, scorching his hand with a burst of energy, I guess, just by picturing Xena in his mind. Who can blame him?
Yes, I know, right?
But what I'm interested in is why there's no Hermes in Xena's universe. I would so like to meet Autolycus's dad.
So you say it didn't happen, and I was like, "Is that right?" Let me look it up. So I went to Wikipedia, and it turns out that Hermes does appear in one episode, the Porcules episode.
Okay, I understand why I don't remember it. I remember the Porcules episode being very popular with young Chris.
I loved it so much. It was like tailor-made specifically for a 5-year-old idiot. They zeroed in on that population. They did focus groups. They did personas. They did test screenings, and at the point that all the 5-year-olds in the audience would go into an absolute frenzy, they're like, "We got it! This is our episode! Hercules nailed it!"
Yeah, I think it also depends on like whether or not in the country that the 5-year-olds are watching it, did they nail the translation? Because in Russian, they nailed the translation, and that worked.
Yeah. Oh, that was so good. Yeah. Shout out to whoever came up with that. just a masterpiece.
Yeah. I also can't imagine that, like, they came up with that not because of good times. They were sitting and like, what else can happen to that douchebag? I mean, should we turn him into a pig? Nah. Well, on the other thought, glad that's settled. Not gonna rewatch it.
Maybe you're missing out. Maybe I should rewatch it. I'll rewatch it and I'll report back.
Write to us on our Instagram if you want a solo episode of just Chris reviewing the Porcules episode.
Yes, please do. We'll do a poll. We'll do a poll on our Instagram.
Meanwhile, the baddie throws an axe at the picture of Salmonius on the wall, like the main baddie, Telmadeus. And the picture is actually very good. I would assume that it was commissioned from a talented painter. So there's something.
It gives kind of like Grecian fresco, but with a 90s spin on it. Like, someone had to go in and paint that on his wall. Yep. He was like, hey, can someone come in and paint a picture of this guy for me, please?
Because I hate him. You know, like, I hate him so much. I want to throw axes at him. And can you also bring me his naked, I mean, just, like, his head? No, not his body. I don't want his body. Just his head on the platter. So Telmadeus rides out with the small group of soldiers, presumably to go get Salmonius himself.
Yeah. You say a small group of soldiers, but just last episode, the same size group of soldiers was literally called an army. I just don't understand how this is supposed to work. When is it an army and when is it a small group of soldiers?
I think it works this way. The budget is really low. So anytime we want to show an army, it's like about 10 people.
20 maybe.
Maybe 20. So the captain of the group, not Tolmedeus, says, keep your eyes open. Meanwhile, Xena follows the group literally two steps behind. It's a very funny scene. The captain notices her at some point, and she's just like standing there waving at him. So the captain tries to attack, gets knocked off his horse, and then Xena starts spinning around with her fists clenched and her fists out, hitting the baddies in the face. Like, she's, I don't know how to describe it. Like, she's this one of those 90s spinning fairy dolls.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to say. That's exactly right? what I was going to say. Like, if you don't know what we're talking about, it might be that you saw that viral video of a girl, like, setting this fairy off, and the fairy is just, like, it flies right into the fire. But yeah, both Alice and I were really into those dolls back in the day. And it really does look like that.
Right? So yeah, Xena does this unique fighting style. I really love it. And Gabrielle loves it too, because she cheers for Xena from the bushes. And then suddenly there's only Xena and Tolmedeus.
Yeah, it's like the soldiers just evaporate for a bit. Later in the scene, we see that they were just all completely knocked out by Xena's fists for a few minutes. But yeah, for a moment, it's just Xena and Tolmedeus, so she fights him.
Yeah, she fights him, and it seems that it's super easy for Xena at first. But then she gets knocked down, and she's disoriented again. And we hear that music again that kind of signifies that something is very wrong. And actually, Gabrielle in the bushes, she says something's wrong, and the baddie nearly kills Xena. He should have killed Xena, but instead of striking with his sword, he kind of just swings his sword around for a bit. It's like this ancient Greek disco, I don't know. So that gives Gabrielle time to say no and to throw her staff from, like, again, 3 kilometers away to knock out the baddie's sword out of his hands.
Yeah, again, the evil overlord handbook comes to mind. Kill your enemies immediately, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, yeah, he's guilty of that a lot in this episode. Mm. So Xena summons Argo and barely manages to escape, much to Telmedeus's glee. So we come back to the village where Lord Seltzer reigns. Gabrielle chastises Xena for keeping the fact that she was poisoned from her, rightfully so. But Xena calmly says, Gabrielle, yell at me later. So we can see that she's really unwell, and she shares that her legs are almost useless and her arms are going to go next, so really dark. Gabrielle tries to get Xena to reassure her that she'll be fine, but Xena says, it's gonna get worse before it gets better. Mm-hmm. So then Salmonius comes in with his seltzer water and asks who's gonna be in charge, because he's not gonna be in charge. And then Xena has an idea. We see the montage of Xena putting on her armor, like in the credits, but slightly different. The credits music also is playing, so we can see that that's a similar scene. But then Gabrielle ends up wearing Xena's costume and a very convincing human hair wig, I might add. So good for them for having that around. So Gabrielle says that the armor is too big on her, and she asks Salmonius to tighten it for her. So Salmonius instantly goes and kind of fiddles with the straps around Gabrielle's boob, and she seems to be pretty chill about it. So I guess that, like, Salmonius is so gay that nobody's remotely shy around him, which is kind of sweet.
I mean, So we know already that Xena is not shy at all when it comes to being naked in front of basically anyone, from porno dad to religious zealots. Like, that's just Xena. Yeah, that's not something that really bothers her in this life.
I don't know if I have a confirmation of that, but I'm pretty sure that Gabrielle is very shy usually.
But yeah, I agree that there seems to be an additional level of comfort around Salmonius. And so, as part of her disguise to appear more convincing, Gabrielle also tries Xena's ululating scream. But she sounds about just as good as you and I would sound if we tried it.
Yep. Sounds about right. So they agree that Gabby is going to ride out to Tomodeus' army and scare them away, posing as Xena. Unclear why should it work, since the real Xena was not as scary to them. But, I mean, Gabrielle has no problem with posing as Xena, but she has a problem with riding Argo. Xena asks, "Didn't you have a pony when you were little?" And turns out that the pony got sick, and what day the pony died. That's what happens to the things you love, says Gabrielle. It's made a blatant parallel with Xena, but when she's talking about it, it seems like, oh, you know, it's just something that happens. And like the love of my life is sick right now, and also might die. Oh, well, such is life. That sounds like that to me. Like, it's very weird.
It's a random thing to say in the context of what's happening, for sure.
Yeah. So Gabrielle, dressed as Xena, gets on Argo. She tries to control Argo with whistling. She calls it the gallop whistle. And apparently she does a shitty job because Argo lays down instead of galloping. Then Salmonius goes, "I thought the gallop whistle sounded something like this." And then he puts his fingers in his mouth and whistles, sending Argo into a gallop and Gabby into a shock.
Yeah, so I think we can assume that Gabrielle has never been on a galloping horse before, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not an easy thing to do.
Nope.
I was the kind of child that tried out like 100 different sports at one point or another, and one of them was horse riding. And I did it for a year, and I didn't try galloping even once because it was considered pretty hard. I think there were like a couple of people in my age group who have tried it, and that was like, oh wow, such a cool thing.
So Gabrielle writes to the baddie army, like, is that their camp or like just in the woods? I don't remember. I think just in the woods. And she's posing as Xena, and basically it looks like a Comic-Con impression of Xena.
Yeah, and the soldiers see her and they're like, has she gotten smaller? But they don't notice that it's a completely different person.
No.
Yeah, I guess they only saw her briefly, but still it's a bit weird.
Or everybody has shitty eyesight at that time. Contact lenses aren't available.
So much pain in that phrase.
I mean,
contact lenses aren't available.
As someone who wears contacts from 14 years old, yeah, that's a pain.
No, for sure. Yeah, same.
So Argo doesn't help, since she decides to lie down again in the middle of Gabrielle's posing as Xena, and Gabrielle is like saying something about like, ah, you should fear my wrath, and then Argo lies down. So yeah, the baddies are like, oh, she's bluffing. So Captain Obvious would be very proud of them. So Gabrielle flees the scene back to the village, aka the factory. And Gabrielle stops at the gates and throws her wooden kind of wooden round thingy, a fake chakram. But luckily, Xena crawls out of the shed and she's been hiding there. And she's like, okay, I'm going to throw the real thing. And of course, Chakram, being a nice boy that he is, just deals with the baddies instantly.
Yeah, one of the ways that the chakram helps is by cutting one of the pipes with fizzy water in it, and somehow the pressure in that pipe is so strong that it turns into a literal water cannon.
That's a very strongly carbonated water, I must say. Also, the villagers kind of help by shaking the seltzer bottles and kind of aiming the corks to shoot at the baddies. It's like a combination of heroic and grotesque.
Yeah, so it looks to me like they've upgraded the corks a bit to have tiny little spikes sticking out of them, and they managed to like make those corks, you know, pierce the first like 2 centimeters of skin of the baddies. But yeah, it's still very stupid. It reminds me of that village battle in The Prodigal, mm-hmm. when it was just, it was so silly that it was a bit embarrassing.
Yeah. But at the end, the baddies retreat, and judging by how Xena reacts, it seems that that was her plan all along. So her plan was like, for Gabrielle, go into the woods. So they would think that Gabrielle is Xena, but think that Xena is bluffing and then fall. I don't know. It's a complicated thing, but maybe Xena is just one of those people who is like, it worked out. So that was my plan all along.
Yeah.
So back at the quote-unquote factory, Salmonius, aka Lord Seltzer, thanks Xena for her help and ends up accidentally spilling the seltzer water on her chest. Like, not even spilling, but like it shoots out of his bottle. And that sounded dirty.
I know, right? He just couldn't contain himself here, Xena.
Wouldn't be the first one.
No, certainly not.
But yeah, like, so anyway, like, it seems that like some seltzer water like spills on her neck and her chest, and I remember watching it for the first time and like, oh, is this accidental antidote?
Yeah, that's really not where my mind went. My first thought was, is this just an excuse so that Lucy Lawless' décolleté can look extra shiny in this scene? And I think that was it.
Yeah, yes. That's true. So then Gabrielle and Xena talk some more about how they mean to fight Talmadeus at his own camp somehow. And Gabrielle very casually asks, Xena, are you gonna die? And Xena very casually answers, what did I tell you? Focus. It's not about me. It's about these people. Anyway, if I die, bury me next to my brother. Good talk.
Yeah, the dialogues between Xena and Gabrielle in this episode are really stiff. I don't know why the writers just couldn't find their groove in that respect.
Yeah, the real moment. That's true.
Mm.
So after that, Gabrielle goes to execute Xena's plan, which consists of throwing Molotov cocktail balls into Talmadeus's camp, causing fire and panic, which works, and riding through the camp screaming for no particular reason, which was not so successful. Because, of course, Talmadeus causes Argo to trip. At some point, Gabrielle falls into a large tub of water. Ew. And they take her out already without a wig. Talmadeus figures out, oh, you're not Xena. And judging by his evil laughter, he's very pleased with himself. He's like, ah, I figured it out.
Yeah, generally Talmadeus is living his best life during this attack. The first fireball hits the camp and he just goes, yay! Okay. But also when the baddies take Gabrielle out of the water, we can see the black dye streaming down her face. So I guess it wasn't a wig. Like, I mean, obviously it was a wig, but in the universe, it wasn't a wig. And they just made some DIY charcoal manic panic back at the factory for Gabrielle.
Okay, yeah, that makes more sense. Because, like, I was like, does Salmonius just have wigs available? He could, but
I wouldn't put it past him, but
yeah. Anyway, then we see two random baddies quietly entering the factory to kill Xena. I don't know where it came from, because it's kind of, at that point, the ruse is still a ruse, but for some reason, those two were sent to kill Xena, and they obviously are from Telmadeus's camp.
Yeah, and they're not there after Salmonius, as we find out later.
Yeah, so that's a little weird to me. But yeah, the scene is very dramatic. Xena is almost blind. She can barely move. But of course, she defeats the baddies by using her close combat skills.
I don't know. I wouldn't even call that close combat. It's like fighting while pretty much laying down.
Fighting while almost dead. Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder whether Xena picked up those skills back when she had broken legs. We haven't seen this part of her story yet, of course, but that's something that came to mind.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been. So back in the camp, Telmadeus chuckles about the fact that he almost fell for the trick, but of course he didn't. And Gabriel tries to bullshit her way out of it by saying, maybe me being captured is a trick. Have you thought about that? But Telmadeus is not buying it. He says he admires Gabrielle's bravery, but he has to kill her now. He promises to make it quick. But of course, he takes his sweet ass time, as always. So it takes him long enough for Argo to save Gabrielle, because Argo, being a heroic horsey that she is, swoops in, starts kicking the soldiers around, and pretty much everyone who's standing nearby gets kicked by Argo. And it's very heroic, but it's very funny to me because horses kick with their back legs, so basically the camera ends up following Argo's heroic butt all the time. So Gabrielle retrieves her staff, knocks out a few people herself, and then gallops away on Argo.
And some of the baddies even want to pursue her, but Telmadeus tells them not to waste the effort, since she's not that much of a threat anyway.
So then we see Salmonius coming back to the factory.
Yeah, and so this is when we learn that the two baddies weren't after him, because he's rubbing his head. So I guess the two baddies knocked him out and just like kept going somewhere, expecting whatever the fuck.
Yeah, it's a weird one.
It's a plot hole.
Yeah, it's a plot hole, yeah. But anyway, Salmonius finds one of the baddies that were sent to kill Xena, and the baddie kind of starts to regain consciousness, but Salmonius quickly knocks him out again. Didn't think that he had it in him, but that's cool. Then he finds Xena, and Xena is knocked out. She's just lying on the ground, no movement, and Salmonius carefully checks her pulse and her breathing and starts to cry, so making us assume that Xena is dead. And I would say that it was acted very well by Salmonius, but by the actor who plays Salmonius.
Robert Trebor. So, fun fact about Robert Trebor.
Okay.
Robert Trebor was born Robert Shankman.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh.
One of us.
Yep.
And he chose Trebor as his pseudonym. And the reason he wanted that one is because it's a palindrome. Robert Trebor.
Ah, nice.
Robert Trebor.
So yeah, it was acted very well by Robert Trebor, because usually this character is a comic relief, but here it's a very dramatic scene, and he's very subtle in his choices, because I think that, like, again, it's very, very easy to go over the top and make us not believe anything that you're feeling, but here I think he's so composed, but you could feel that he's really kind of like coming to terms with the fact that Xena is dead. So yeah, I really loved his acting there.
Yeah, and it completely caught me off guard also. So obviously we all know that Xena is not dead, right?
Yeah.
But Robert Trebor does such a fantastic job, and we can hear how shaky his voice is as he says, "I will miss you." Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it's just like I teared up myself.
Oh, yeah, no, I get it. Yeah, it's really, really very good.
And back at the baddie camp, there's a discussion about whether Xena is alive. And for some reason, Talmadeus punches his sidekick for the mere suggestion that Xena might be alive. That's super harsh. And also, like,
sure.
Why? Like, there's no reason for him to be so certain that she's dead.
Boys will be boys. It's, yeah. He just wanted to hit someone.
Yep, okay.
So, Gabrielle then returns to the factory. And she means to tell Xena that there's trouble, but she's met by Salmonius, who grimly shows her Xena's body covered by a rag. And here I would say Gabby's reaction was a little too subtle for me. Mm. Like, she cried more when her new dead boyfriend was taken by Celeste in the Death in Chains episode.
Yeah, I also feel that. I was like, I was waiting for her to start reacting and mm-hmm. she would just not do anything. And I was like, I don't know whether this is the right way to play it.
Yeah, not really believable. So Gabrielle strokes Xena's hair when she sits next to her. And this is obviously a behavior of a person who's lost a love and life partner. But that's the behavior of that person a few days after, not the moment they find out. Like,
yeah, that,
I guess I just wanted a stronger reaction, but they kind of showed Gabrielle going to that defense mechanism of like, let's get to work now and ignore our grief, which is a possible thing, but
yeah, but it didn't ring true for me either. Mm-hmm. I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Salmonius then kind of gently suggests that he and Gabrielle just get out of the village, but Gabrielle doesn't even entertain that idea for a second.
Yeah, she gives Salmonius all of the directions of how to defend the village, and she says that she'll go and find Aeolus to get help, I guess, from him and Hercules to protect the people, basically.
Yeah, and she uses exactly the same words as Xena did. When she was talking about this, saying that it's not about them, it's about these people that they have to protect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in the next scene, the cruel among us, aka me, finally get the reaction from Gabrielle that we've been waiting for. She hits the tree over and over, and she cries and screams and then collapses to the ground. But then she tries to kind of snap herself out of it by repeating "focus, Xena," said to focus. And like, yeah, that's a strong reaction, but again, for some reason the sequences of scenes were not truly believable to me. Meanwhile, Salmonius sits by Xena's corpse and says, "All right, I know what I have to do," and then leaves. And in a second, we find out that Salmonius wants to trade his life and Xena's corpse in exchange for Talmadeus not hurting the people in the village. And I would say that with all of this Xena dying drama, actually Salmonius is the main character of the episode, as we were saying, because everything connected to his journey, his reaction, his personal growth, that I believe. Everything else, not so much.
Yeah, totally with you here. And in this scene, I also just feel so bad for him because he comes mm-hmm. to Talmadeus with this hope in his eyes. Mm-hmm. And he clearly believes that he can just sacrifice himself and save the villagers. And he's like, but you promise you're going to leave them alone, right? Like this, mm-hmm. we'll make a deal and you're going to leave them alone. And there's something so heartbreaking about him being so naive.
Yeah, that's true. But also, like, I guess because his calling is to be a tradesman. So I think that he has that, right? Like he has his own code of honor, and that code of honor is about like, if we made a deal, we're holding on to that deal. And like, again, at the beginning, he made a deal that he'll sell buckles and swords. He didn't make a deal that those buckles and swords would not dissolve in the rain.
Right.
But anyway, yeah, love Salmonius in this episode. And it seems that he strikes a deal with Talmadeus, but of course the next second Talmadeus is boasting to his soldier that he intends to kill Salmonius, take Xena's body, and sell the villagers as slaves. No surprise here. So yeah, I don't want to even think about what he intends to do with Xena's body.
Yeah, and just as the viewer might start contemplating that, we cut to Xena's quote-unquote body, mm-hmm. and we see that it might not just be a body after all. Mm-hmm. We see that her hand is showing from underneath the rag, and it's slightly twitching.
Yeah, like they're giving us hope. The next day, Salmonius brings Xena's body to Talmadeus, while Gabrielle watches from the bushes again, still wearing Xena's clothes.
And when they bring Xena's body, they just like throw it onto the ground, mm-hmm. really carelessly. She just kind of rolls. And look, I know this is TV, and this is something that's pretty much almost never depicted accurately anyway, even in like prestige TV. Mm-hmm. But Xena looks so alive. She looks like rosy cheeked.
yeah. But I guess that like at this point she is alive, so it's fine. I'll give them a pass.
Yeah, but I don't know. Sure.
Yeah.
she doesn't even look sick, you know?
No, she doesn't. She looks great.
She looks so good. She looks better than either of us two look right now.
True. So Talmadeus asks who killed Xena, and Salmonius is kind of like in his own thoughts. He is very much in his grief, and he just quietly says, "I don't know." But then Talmadeus is like, "I'm asking you, who killed Xena? I'm gonna tell you, I killed Xena, and I am gonna make sure that the whole world knows it." So after that, he informs Salmonius that he intends to sell the villagers to slavery and that he doesn't give two shits about their deal. So he orders to tear Xena's body apart with two horses, but Gabrielle runs in and does a fantastic job with her staff. She's like knocking everyone over by the dozens. She also manages to knock the sword out of the hands of one of the soldiers, and the sword goes flying in the air, and Gabby leaps forward and catches the sword to point it directly at Talmadeus's neck. If it was an RPG, I would say that Gabby got a big level up after Xena's death.
Yeah, I wonder whether Xena's outfit is helping her out here a little bit. You know, there's this thing where if someone tells you, sing the highest note you possibly can, mm-hmm. so you sing it, and then they say, okay, now sing the highest note you think Mariah Carey can hit, it's quite likely that you will manage to go higher when you're doing it not as yourself, but as Mariah Carey. I even tried it myself. And I think it worked for me as well. So maybe that's kind of having an effect here as well, that she's not really fighting only as herself. She's also kind of fighting as Xena.
Maybe. Yeah, that's an interesting take on it. So Gabrielle holds a sword, like, near Talmadeus' neck. But she's still in her strict non-killing era, as we know. And he kind of senses that. So he's like, the moment you blink, I'm gonna get that sword. And of course, the next second, she kind of hesitates, and he's able to kind of capture her and take the sword away.
And he does that actually in a very smart way. So it's not just that she independently hesitates. He says something like, oh, you're not even holding that sword properly. Mm. And her eyes go to the handle. And that's when he gets her.
Which, that's smart.
Yeah, that's how you know that he's, you know, that's how you know that you know. That's how you can tell that he's this seasoned warlord and he's been mm-hmm. in thousands of those situations and he just feels so comfortable and he knows exactly how to get those people.
Mm-hmm. So. Actually, impressive. You know, it is. And I would say that as far as baddies go, Telmadeus is not the worst one. He has clear motivations. He is a little bit on the over-the-top side. And you can see that, like, not a lot of thought went into creating him as a character. But still, he's better than most, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
So he commands his army to tie Xena's body to the horses. And he, of course, wants to kind of like have a gruesome scene of tearing Xena in half, basically. But one of the horses is Argo. And we kind of see her communicating with the other horse and asking for a favor, basically.
Yeah, I gotta say, so I just praised Telmadeus for doing something really smart. Now I'm gonna say that this is extremely stupid of Telmadeus and his gang. Like, surely he must know that it would be more difficult to make Xena's horse hurt Xena than literally any other horse. Yeah. And later in the scene, he like finds out that it's Xena's horse, but where did he think Argo came from otherwise?
I mean, in defense of Telmadeus, that's not his job. That's his gang job. Like, he's a warlord and a commander. He doesn't have the time to look at horses and see which
horse
like, it
is. Half of his quote-unquote army has had close encounters with Argo's butt like 3 hours ago.
Yeah, so they should remember it, not him. So yeah, like, the horses communicate, and then there is a gruesome scene because they hit the horses over their backs with whips quite a few times to make them run, but the horses stay in place, and I would say that that's a very disturbing animal cruelty scene. Like, I'm surprised they haven't mentioned that in the credits, or maybe they have, I don't know. Aww. But Telmadeus, at some point, he recognizes Argo, and he's like, oh, that's Xena's horse, kill it.
So that scene actually makes me think that Argo is the second main character of the episode after Salmonius. So this whole episode is really about Salmonius and Argo, and all the rest is kind of garbage.
That's true. And I'm okay with that. Like, both Salmonius and Argo, they have heroic arcs. They're well-developed as characters. Like, I can see that. So, of course, the soldier is about to strike Argo with a sword, but then he's stopped by Xena, who is magically not dead.
Yeah, and we get this silly moment with Telmadeus and then Salmonius and then Gabrielle all going, Xena? Xena? Xena! Like, one after the other with varying emotions. Like, surprise, delight, fear.
So Xena says, don't ever touch my horse again. And then she starts fighting. First, of course, with the soldier who attacked Argo, but she knocks him out pretty quickly. And then she starts fighting with the rest of Telmadeus' army. And she throws the staff actually at the soldier who is holding Gabrielle. So she's setting her free this way, and Gabrielle grabs the staff, and then she comes up to Xena, and she's very glad, and she's like, oh, glad to have you back. Don't ever do this again. And Xena reminds her that they're in the middle of a fight right now. So Xena fights Telmadeus, who says that he's actually glad that she's not dead, because he wanted to kill her himself.
Yeah, and he says that as they're kind of locked in this fight, facing each other really closely. And Xena responds with, yeah, well, that would have saved me from your breath. And the dude actually thinks about it for a second, like, oh shit, maybe I do have bad breath.
Oh! That's cute.
Yeah, it's a nice touch from the actor.
Yeah. So Xena beats him up and throws him into the tub of water that Gabriel fell into before. Ew. And
what's wrong with falling into water? Like, it doesn't look particularly nasty. It's just water.
It looks like something that the horses drink from.
Yeah. They don't, like, poop in it. It's not like they pre-poop the bags. It's a mental barrier.
Oh. As soon as Tamadeus dives out, he is faced with all the villagers that surround him and point swords at him, which I suppose they got from his soldiers as they disarmed them. But the villagers look very sinister. Like, they look as if they're about to eat him, which, honestly, good for them.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and some nice carbonated water.
So at the end, we cut to, like, sometime later, with everyone back in their regular clothing, and Gabrielle actually having a nice moment with Argo. She's saying that she's glad she now knows that Argo doesn't hate her.
Gabrielle also says that she thought Xena was dead. And Xena's like, I was. Girl, I don't think you understand how death works.
As far as Xena's deaths go, it was not the most serious one. Spoiler alert. So, Xena thanks Gabrielle for risking her life trying to get her home, and Gabrielle says, like, of course, after all that you've given me, and all of the times that you saved my life. And again, that's that stiff dialogue, because at that point, there should be something like, yeah, I love you too, Xena, or at least like something among those lines. But no, next time, I guess.
Yeah. And that concludes the episode.
Yes. Yes, it does.
So, what was the gayest moment of the episode for you?
I think that when, like, I don't believe that scene in general, but when Gabrielle is sitting next to Xena, thinking that Xena is dead, and just strokes her hair, like, that really was something that, like, I cannot imagine doing that to your close friend. I can only imagine doing that to someone you love and, like, consider your partner.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think for me also, it's specifically the way that she touches her hair and, like, kind of brushes it away and kind of rearranges it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, something about that was really gay.
Yeah, I think it's like the familiarity of another person's body.
Yeah. I don't have a better one. I think I'm gonna agree with you.
That's cool.
And how many chakrams out of 10 would you give this episode?
That's hard, because it has its moments. Love Salmonius. Love Argo, actually.
Honestly, this episode made me wish that they kept Salmonius and kind of had him as the main comic relief character instead of Joxer.
Definitely.
Like, Joxer would have been great in Hercules.
Actually.
He would have fit right in.
Yeah, he's like the third dude, like, kind of goofy, and they are, like, teaching him, like, the ways to be a bro. I don't know.
In a better universe, we would have gotten Salmonius as a regular instead of Joxer.
Yeah, for sure. Like, yeah, and then really the actor does an incredible job here. But yeah, that I would say a 6, maybe, because, like, really the story arc is below average, I would say, and, like, the Xena Gabrielle relationship is really fumbled. But because it kind of has those sparkling moments with a few side characters, I would say a 6.
Yeah, I was actually hesitating between a 4 and a 5.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm gonna go with a 5 because yeah, there were some moments that were quite good. Robert Trevor is good. But yeah, the greater good ain't that good.
Nope. Yeah, and we forgot to mention the funny credits say excessive belching can cause brain damage and social ostracism. Kids, please don't give in to peer pressure. Play it safe.
Yeah, I feel like that's a nice change. You said that they should have written something about how, you know, like no animals were harmed, which maybe they did. But I was getting a bit tired of the no blah 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 were harmed during the production of this motion picture. I feel like they did it in like half of the of the funny credits so far. And I was like, it's getting a bit formulaic. Like, try to come up with something else.
Mix it up. Yeah, no, I get, like, the funny credits are better than the episode, honestly.
Wow.
Yeah. But let's see if the next one is better. We've, as we said, like, just a few episodes left in season one.
Yes, yes. We hope that you will join us then to hear about episode 22 of season one called Callisto. I wonder what this episode is going to be about.
We shall see.
And in the meantime, you can follow us on Instagram at Zeta Made Me Gay. We would love it if you wrote to us, tell us what you thought about the episode. We will do a poll about whether you want us to do a special episode where I review Porcules. My fate is in your hands.
Yep. And on that note,
thank you and talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.